Welcome to the 112 Degrees Navigating Narcissistic Relationships podcast. I am your host, Steph Misch, and this podcast is where we explore the complexities of narcissistic relationships. The practical tips, shared experiences, and expert advice are designed to help you understand, cope with, and ultimately break free from these very difficult relationship types. In this episode, we talk about when narcissists actually tell the truth, share some examples, and how to work through some of these surprising truths. But here's the thing. Narcissists will tell the truth, but their reality is so outlandish, you really don't believe what you're hearing. So you may take it lightly or take it as a joke. Worst of all, if it seems like an issue or a problem, and the narcissist is heavy on the love bombing, then you may show up as a lifesaver and see this as an opportunity to rescue them or help out and end up tangled in the web of the narcissistic relationship. But fair warning, I recommend that you take the narcissist's shared information as face value and leave it on the table. In fact, how about just leave the table and dodge that bullet altogether? As Maya Angelou says, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. In other words, trust your own perceptions and observations that you witness about other people, and trust what they are telling you at first, because they know themselves better than you do. And think about it. You've just met, so what does anyone have to lose by telling the truth and accepting it for what it is? For example, I remember meeting someone for the first time, and one of the first surprising declarations he made was he was an alcoholic. And I was like, wait a minute, really? I was like, are you kidding me right now? So when I discovered he was serious, I was like, wait a minute, that's not cool. That's not something you want to tell somebody like on the first date. And he was like, well, you know, I just want to go ahead and get it out of the way. The fact that it's in the way, and now I got to have this whole conversation about when did this happen? Why are you doing this? Are you in school? Have you taken some training? Have you gone to Alcoholic Anonymous classes or all of these questions? You know, which is still pretty risky to have at first, but they're being honest, right? So it's, you know, it's a toss up. So good to know, but it's best to run in the opposite direction with this type of information. And of course, with me, I was like, well, I can help this person. It shouldn't be that bad, right? If they're being that upfront, they're being honest, right? And see, that's part of the catch. That's part of the hook in, because you're thinking, wow, if they're being this transparent with something this serious, then they must really be honest. They must really be a noble person. So you kind of go in for the help. You go in on the, you know, nurturer, confidant type situation. And maybe not so much. It was a red flag for me. And some of the issues you may experience when dating an alcoholic anyway is certainly their unpredictable behavior, mood swings, and unreliable communication or commitments. They can't keep up with what they're saying or what they said or what they're going to do or if they did it or was really going to do it in the first place, right? So you really have to keep up with them and ensure that they're not involved in any lying or hiding situations, events, or hiding actual alcohol and, you know, behind bookcases or under the couch or all over the place, trying to control it, but really cannot. So you start to see a pattern where you really have to, you want to help, but you can't really hone in. Or like you're not an expert in this area. And some people may be. And if you are, and you choose to help out, that is fantastic. But typically, when someone shares this information, and if they don't already have a plan in place or a process or a program that they're working on, and it's just a lot to deal with. You know, you also have to deal with the emotional ups and downs and a myriad of mood swings, such as frustration, anger, sadness, and disappointment. And it may be fun and exciting at first because you're thinking, oh, on a social tip, this is cool. We have cocktails, we have mixed drinks, we go out, and that's fine. But only when they get settled in to a comfort zone and they're just trusting that you're in and they start drinking more than they can handle, that's certainly a time to rethink your decision. Now, other options you may have in this area where narcissists may tell the truth are your workaholics. And for some reason, workaholics feel like they're doing a good deed by working so much. So their excuse is that they need the money to keep things afloat. Like they need to make sure that they never have to want for anything. Oh, you like nice things, so I have to work to make sure that you have those things. No. Although working is a good thing, too much of anything is never good for anyone, right? So you kind of already know. Run as fast as you can. Meanwhile, let's take a look at a couple of things workaholics bring to the table. Now, workaholics are, as the name says, they are consumed by thoughts of work, and that's all they talk about. Even when they're not working or on date nights in times they shouldn't really even be thinking about work, that's what they're doing. So who wants to sit around while they are constantly checking emails or taking work phone calls all day or even at the dinner table? Seriously? Next, they're long work hours. So you barely see them. And when you do, they are asleep or trying to get to sleep. And it's so crystal clear that they don't have time for a relationship anyways. So with all of this going on with the workaholic, you definitely experience the feeling of neglect as they barely create time to rest because their conversations are all about work and there's no room for any type of real emotional connectivity. So the quality time that you may need to cultivate a relationship through conversation and intimacy, it is out the window. So the recommendation for navigating a relationship with a workaholic requires open communication, which is great for all relationships anyways. Boundary setting and potentially seeking external support, such as couples therapy. That way, you can address the underlying issues that's driving the behavior and establish healthier balance between work and personal life. If you're already entangled in a relationship with a workaholic, then the steps I just mentioned should work nicely. However, if you've just met someone, as I mentioned earlier, and they tell you they are workaholic, then here's a good place to note that an ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure. Because I would recommend that the workaholic go ahead and get individual therapy to address those underlying issues so that they can establish a healthier balance between work and personal life, then pursue a personal relationship. So from where I'm sitting, anyone who has any type of holic in their daily routine is too much to deal with. These are people who have an abnormal desire for or dependence on objects or activity, such as workaholic, a chocoholic, a shopaholic, an alcoholic, and etc. So, on to the next. There have been times where people have stated or proclaimed or admitted that they get bored easily. For me, when someone says that they get bored easily, it could mean that they have a low tolerance for monotony or routine. I get it. And this statement could be a little tricky though, because if you meet someone who gets bored easily, you can think that they're creative or they're adventurous, and it may seem intriguing or exciting at first, or, you know, this could be a red flag. So you really don't know how to take it because you're just meeting them. So you just kind of have to see how it goes. So that means that your new boo could either have an inability to maintain interest or commitment over time, potentially leading to relationship instability. Or they may just want you to create all of these adventurous and intriguing excursions to entertain them in an effort to keep them from getting bored. So you're not really sure where that is going. So you continue to have those conversations just to make sure, which is a tall order to expect someone to just come in and start creating activities and setting up things for your entertainment when you just met. You know, I'm just saying. So the next experience that I've had personally is someone saying, oh, I like to be in control. That's not cool. And there's a way to do it or a way to say certain things, but controlling people want to be in full control of everything or assert power over others. And that whole phrase, I like to be in control, is just, it's just too many negative connotations and it's really just not cool. So they can come off as being intimidating, overbearing, and in their efforts to do what they want to do by manipulating people or trying to utilize this overbearing power type stature, it's just not cool. In this case, I'd say, you know what? Thanks for the warning, because that's not real cool to just come off in the beginning. Like in the times of a relationship, when you meet someone, you're supposed to be, you know, charismatic and, you know, kind and, you know, just very hopeful. You're still in this euphoric area in the relationship. You kind of want to keep that on a positive light tip. And even if you have some hangups or have some issues, you would want to channel those in some other area or into some positive area. But that's not something you want to think it's okay to just bring in the conversation or into a new relationship. So not really sure about that one. So because of the negative connotations of people who like to be in control and the potentiality of argumentations, or, you know, they may be very argumentative, or, you know, there may be some other, you know what, that can just go wrong so quickly. So let me just grab my purse. And how about you just lose my number? Because this looks like another opportunity to step away from the conversation and the person. I'm just saying. Last but not least, I do recall someone saying that they march to the beat of a different drummer. Now, this statement specifically describes a person who thinks, lives, or behaves in an unusual way. They are typically non-compliant and do things their way without even taking other people into consideration. So naturally, having to deal with someone who practically lives by my way or the highway, that sounds like a free ticket to the front door and to never look back. I'm just saying. So here's the thing. Overall, accepting any of these truths can be emotionally draining and challenging, often requiring way too much patience, way too many understanding opportunities, and eventually professional help for support and guidance. These are ultimately some of my personal experiences that I've endured, and I thought they were a little strange. So I was like, let me share and get some perspective as well. So if you are interested in sharing or have some truths or confessions you'd like to share, feel free to leave them in the comment section or on my website. I would love to hear some of your experiences as well. Thank you for joining us this week on 112 Degrees, Navigating Narcissistic Relationships. You will find more resources and content on my website at desire2ir.com. That's desire2ir.com. Also, don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode as we trailblaze a path to unlock the true love you deserve.